Anyway, so welcome. So this session today, we'll talk about migrations. So we'll talk about what are the things that you need to do before you do migrations. And we'll actually focus on two targets, on SharePoint Online in general, and then actually typo OneDrive for Business. So anyway, so but again, so just to set the stage, so the context, there's two contextual approaches for migration, if I can get the clicker to work. So if you think of it, are you my clicker now, Phil?
Yes. I'm your clicker.
So there's the, don't worry, everything will be great type of scenario. And then there's the other way. So it'll be pain and misery, but at the end, everything will be good. So, and for those of you who are in the sales side here, who are selling stuff, migration stuff, so you usually tend to see those guys pitching, oh, it'll be all nice and easy. Like, you just automatically, the stuff goes into the cloud, everyone is happy. Then you talk to the consultants who've done it, and they go, oh my God, this will be painful. So again, the truth is somewhere in between, right? So what we'll try to cover today in this 1 hour that we have is kind of sort of how should you address the whole migration scenario? How should you do an assessment to figure out what content do you have? Because not all content should go to the cloud. There's stuff that you actually should get rid of. So we'll talk about a pragmatic way of doing assessment, and we'll demonstrate some of the out-of-the-box tools that we have in the product that can help you kind of do the initial content triaging of content. And we'll also look at some of the other things that you need to be mindful of depending on your migration choice. So this would be functionalities that you have deployed to your environment, maybe customizations, maybe out-of-the-box functionalities that you're depending on whatnot, because it may be that your target does not have the same capabilities. Then we'll spend a bit more time on OneDrive. So we'll talk about the enterprise scenarios where we are actually want to migrate stuff into OneDrive. So we'll talk about provisioning. So how can we provision OneDrive personal sites for other users? How can we set the permissions correctly so that you can have a migration account who is moving stuff into it? And then we'll do that as a demo, because we actually are firm believers that if you don't show something, it's just PowerPoint. And if it's PowerPoint, like, it may be truth or it may not be truth. And then we'll end the day with talking more generic about migration. So like, how should you move the data? What approaches should you choose? What are the tooling? What are the things that you should look out for when you're choosing the tool? And we'll do a small demo where we are actually doing a migration of content into users' personal sites. So with that, let's start with the assessment piece. So what do we have? So in reality, most companies have content that, very few companies actually have good governance in place. So they usually have content that's out of date, it's duplicated. It's usually really hard to find the content. So I always use the analogy of moving when I talk about migration. So we actually moved from our previous apartment to a new apartment a couple of years ago. So I was doing the, luckily we moved into a bigger apartment. So that's always helpful, because like, if the stuff fit in your old apartment, it'll probably fit in the new apartment. So, but then I was doing inventory in the attic, and I found, these boxes actually remind me, I found 6 boxes of old cassette tapes. And I was like, okay, I'll get rid of those. But then I made the mistake. I opened the first box. And it goes like, hey, I actually like this. I still like this band. And then, so I'm pretty proud of myself. I actually got rid of like a third of the boxes. Guess where the boxes are now? Up in the attic in a new place. I don't even have a cassette player. Mm-hmm. It just goes to show that because...
Do your kids even know what cassettes are?
No, they don't. I have an old car where they push the button and out comes this plastic thing. They go, what's this? It's a precursor to a diskette. What's a diskette? It's a precursor to a CD. Okay. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so, but that's just human behavior. So people tend to sort of stick to content. And what I've also seen is, so in that area, so having, when you're doing this sort of a triaging, you really need to make sure that you're not moving the wrong things. So another thing that I found when we were moving, so I've been working in IT for a long time, and when working in IT and attending a bunch of these conferences, you end up with tons of conference t-shirts. Guess what happens if you put a conference t-shirt in a dark place for many years? It shrinks. So again, so am I prepared to get rid of my Windows 95 launch t-shirts? But these things apply for content marketers because people are, you always get the feeling that, well, I might need it. So when you're doing an assessment and a migration project, please make sure that you have someone who has the authority, like my wife, you're getting rid of those t-shirts. Mm-hmm. So because you actually, once you do that, you actually end up on the other side of the fence with just fresh content, but just content that you need. So some other things that you probably should do also is, unless you have good content governance in place, you should make sure that you're sort of reorganizing the data in such a way that it works in a new environment. It may be that you're merging site collections. It may be that you're splitting up site collections to multiple ones. And also making sure that you're tagging your content properly so that you have the metadata so that then search can actually help you to find that content that you have. So if you look at it in an ideal world, your content would be kind of what we say lift and shift. So it should be ready to be moved to the next environment. And I've seen this with customers who have had really strong either retention policies in place or really are enforcing governance so that they make sure that people apply the right policies, that old content gets deleted and whatnot. So having your environment in shape actually makes migrations also much, much easier. And with this, you won't have to ask your end users to go and re-tag content, remove content and stuff like that. It should provide you with the least complexity. So for those customers who actually qualify for this, congratulations. I had one customer. It was in a country called Utopia. But in reality, you don't really see that. So it is. But the sort of a level of complexity varies very much from customer to customer. So what we're now actually going to talk about is more a pragmatic way of actually doing this triaging. So, and in reality, when you're doing these things, one of the key things on most of the organization's minds is minimize the end user impact, because you don't want to get tons of people calling the help desk, so where's my content? So who moved my cheese? Where's my content? Where's my files? I can't find my files. So some of the things that benefit, so if you still have time before your planned migration, make sure that you're introducing governance toolings, that you start to use tooling that's already in place in the product. Also, do some level of inventory. So it could be as easy as doing some scripting to figure out, so out of my 30,000 site collections, how many of those have not been modified in the last, let's say, 12 months? So finding out the dormant information, which is probably outdated, because it's not very likely that you want to sort of move content that hasn't been touched in years. So, and another kind of interesting thing with this triage piece is that when you do this, make sure that you involve all the relevant stakeholders in this, because typically what I've seen in migration projects, if migration project is IT driven, and then IT asks the business units, what should we move? Business says, everything, right? Because they think that IT will cover all the cost. So what I've usually seen to be really successful in cases like this is making sure that you get the buy-in then. So you identify the content. You know that out of my 30,000 site collections, these 5,000 belong to the sales unit, these 5,000 belong to engineering. So coming up with a way where they actually are carrying some of the cost of the migration. Because if they carry the cost, they also have an incentive to actually go and delete content, get rid of the old content. So again, on the next slide, we'll show how easy it is with just PowerShell running on the server to sort of do a list of all the site collections, when they were last modified, and then show sort of also capture the owner information, whatnot. So again, simple PowerShell going through all the web applications, all the site collections, and from the with object model, we actually capture usage. And then in this case, like you can see clearly here that we're dividing the usage by a big number. Why are we doing this? Because the usage information is stored like with way too much detail, so we're converting this to be megabytes. So again, doing something like this, so at the end result, what we will get out of this is a list, simple list, where we have the site collection. So obviously, like if you have 30,000, you don't want to have flat lists. But then having these in either a database or somewhere where you actually can do processing on this and have some logic and then say that, well, if I find site collections that haven't been modified in X months, if the size is less than Y, do this activity. So the whole goal is to sort of, in a content assessment, come up with sort of rules that limit the content. So filter the content, being so that we'll move smaller sites, we'll move sites that are active and whatnot. And this also will help us because once we sort of know that if we have a bunch of small sites that we need to move, we can probably move them quite quickly because there's not much content. Because for large sites, the duration is directly proportional to the content volume. So getting a simple inventory of what we have is hugely impactful. And some other things that we usually probably should do in a list like this is also capture, for instance, based on which site definitions are these sites created. Because you may actually want to say that if we were, God forbid, using custom site definitions in our environment, if we want to move to a new environment, how should we address those? So having kind of basic ways of doing this actually makes tons of sense. So with that, I'll hand over to Phil to talk a bit about the hard part, which are the customizations.
Okay. Thanks, Kimo. So as you probably know, in the Office 365 world, farm solutions, full trust code, are not supported. And also, just for even internal migrations going from 2010 to 2013, you might want to look at them and see about replacing them. But to do this, we need to know what's in the farm, where it's being used, and then, of course, develop a plan, a remediation plan, so that the content will go smoothly, the migration will go smoothly, and the users will have a good experience.
Yeah, and also the customer I had in Utopia, they had a complete inventory, so they knew exactly everything that they had in their farm. That's the only customer I've ever seen actually knowing what's deployed correctly. So
there are lots of ways to find customizations, and you may have tools that you can use already in-house. You can write your own PowerShell or CSOM programs to check what's in your farm. An easy way to get at a pretty good amount of information is to use an out-of-the-box SharePoint command, the old STS-ADM command. And there are a couple of them, an enum sites, which goes through and gets you your list of all site collections and their sizes. Also, there's one called enum all webs. And enum all webs goes through the whole farm and pulls back information on where there are customizations, where there are features, web parts, that you can then use to go through and develop those plans. And a word of caution, that enum all webs, if you're running it on a large farm, produces a very large document.
So for the environment that I was recently assessing with the 30,000 site collections, that file was like 3.5 gigs. Mm-hmm. So it's a decent sized XML file, right?
Okay. So we always say if you're running a command like that that's going to go through and recurse through your farm, make sure you run it when your farm utilization is low and, plan it for during off hours. It's not that it's that big of a utilization hit typically, but it is an additional load, so recommended practice, do it during your off-peak hours. Okay, so great. We have a 1 gigabyte plus XML file, and what do we do with it? Do we start with Notepad? I can tell you that that doesn't work real well. It won't even load. And then second, not something that you can do for useful information. So what we want to do is take that file and make it easy for you to analyze. So what we're proposing is saving it out, the different records, into a database so that you can then do pivot tables and analyze it in Excel. And there are a couple ways to do that. If you're a SQL person, integration services, you can do a nice package and split it out. There's also a CodePlex application called XML to SQL, and we've got a link to that that will take it and create the database for you with all the tables and push the records there.
Yeah, and the nice thing, once you have it in a database, then you can start to sort of populate reports from Excel and use things like Power BI to actually dig into the information in more detail. Mm-hmm. Because at the end of the day, for instance, for the customization piece, we need to know what we have in the farm, but we also need to know where they are used, because it may be that it's deployed to the farm, but actually never used. So if it's never used, you don't have to remediate, you just get rid of it.
Right, and if it's gonna be a lot of code for you to re-implement it, and it's only used on one site, you know, either you can have a discussion with the business unit, do they still need it? Can it be deprecated? If it is still needed, maybe they can pay for it because nobody else is using it. So you can have a better discussion than just going, oh gosh, everything needs to come forward, this is a ton of work.
Can you bump up the font on this?
I can.
I think we're probably one of the only sessions during this conference that are still doing STS ADM. So I kind of feel old now, so.
How's that?
That's good.
Better? Okay. So running a SharePoint farm, and this is a small one so that for demo purposes so that it'll run quickly. So I'm going to go ahead and kick this off. So loaded the snap in, running the command, and you can run that from the SharePoint command line as well. I just wanted to have it all in one place.
The thing is, you have to run this on the servers themselves. Mm-hmm. So if you're in a situation where your environment is outsourced, you have to ask the outsourcer to do this for you. Question is, can we do this by remoting PowerShell? Maybe. That's an honest answer.
Yeah. I've not tried that myself.
You would have to instantiate a remote shell, remote command shell, and then execute mm-hmm. it that way so that you would actually do the execution on the other side.
And you can see we produced a file. We piped it to a CSV file. I'm sorry, to a text file called enumwebs. And if I edit that, you can see.
It's clear as mud, right?
Yeah, so, I mean, it's a simple XML file.
You don't need anything more. Start reading this file, and then you just figure out your remediation strategy.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So what we did to make this a little more user-friendly was, again, you create this XML to SQL program, and we just run that. And what it's doing, it's going through and parsing that file and saving it, the information out to SQL. So if I refresh my databases now, I've got a SharePoint 2014, and you can see we've got these tables that correspond to the different nodes. And if we go ahead and query them, you can start seeing some of the information that we can get. Okay, not very interesting on a small farm. Let me show you what it looks like when we look at the farm Kimo was mentioning before. So I did some queries and some joins across the tables and then created some pivot tables. So this one is looking at the web parts. Right now we're seeing the distinct non-built-in, so I filtered out in the query anything that was based to the product. And you can see we've got a bunch of web parts. And you can also see most of them are not on many sites. Right? So if I click on one and expand it, you can see, okay, this is in a a couple of sites, this particular web part. You also can see that there are some other ones that are in, and I'm not going to expand that, like in 28,000 sites. So if you're planning a migration, very good to know, right? We've got some that are going to be very heavy, very high impact that we're going to have to look at. And for planning purposes, we'd have to address them early, because for migrating our stuff, it's got to be in place before we start moving pretty much any of the sites. The ones that are only in one or two sites, if that site's scheduled to go later in the migration, when we're building our plans, we can schedule that out later. Okay. All right. All right, so let's switch back.
Yeah, so again, as you saw, like simple ways using out-of-the-box tools and a tool that we'll actually have a link to that tool later in the slide deck that you can download and just run it, and then it'll create the SQL databases and all that for you. And then it's down to your business intelligence to actually figure out what's in it.
Oh, and I forgot, I had one more to show.
Oh,
my apologies. Okay. Switching back over to the SharePoint farm, one other thing I was going to show was that some of the content analysis pieces. So Kimo had mentioned, well, how do we go, you know, we might want to look at site collections when they were last modified, or look at, you know, who the owner is so we can start those communication planning. So it's a pretty simple PowerShell application to do that. And we've got the PowerShell in the appendix of the deck, by the way, if you're interested or need it as a starting point. But something like that will produce a comma-separated file that very easy to dump something like
can
that into Excel.
Increase the font size?
I could, but I'm going to paste it over here real quickly.
Yeah.
Okay, and you can see it just drops right in. Do a text to columns. Make a comma, and then as simple as that, we now have the information where we can start looking at our information and analyzing it.
Can you make the font size bigger?
So pretty easy. Obviously, this is at a very small scale, but you can do this on a larger farm, the exact same approach, and get the information, how active are the sites, when was it last used, is it a candidate for archival or deletion, also check the size, and if you've been keeping up with the site collection owners, have a way to contact or reach out for those people. All right, back to you.
Yep. Sorry? If it's zero for site collection, then there's no content in it. It's just an empty site collection.
And in this case, those ones were the roots, right?
The question was, so what are those site collections with zero? So typically in a farm, you will have really small site collections. So you'll have some of the root webs that you actually don't, root site collections where you don't have any content, but you have to have it for certain purposes. Ideally, if you look at your environment, you should filter out the ones that have only like less than a certain threshold of content, because that's not valuable. So again, usually when you run this in your labs, you will find a bunch of zeros, but when you run them in production environments, you shouldn't have that many site collections with zero, because if you do, then there's something wrong with your provisioning and governance processes. Mm-hmm. Then people are just creating sites without using them. Yeah. So based on the kind of the assessment type of work, so the next step is then remediation. So we'll talk a bit about why do we need to do this, what will we remediate, and how to remediate, because this is typically in the migration and engagements one of the tougher sort of nuts to crack. So again, we need to do remediation, especially for customizations, is because some of the customizations can't be migrated as they are. So like Phil mentioned, if you have farm solutions, we don't support farm solutions in the cloud. And also, even if you're doing an on-premises migration, I would actually encourage you to revisit your customizations to see, are there alternative ways of meeting those business objectives? So whenever you can get rid of code, it's good. It makes your life easier in the past. If you can't get rid of code, try to make it as cloud-friendly as possible. So again, so the remediation path will be different for different type of scenarios. And we're actually spending quite a lot of time within the consulting services in Microsoft actually figuring out reference implementations and patterns on how to do these things, because today the farm solutions are, to me, one of the top migration blockers for the cloud, because you have customizations that won't work in the cloud. Then from the content point of view, you also should look at this. There's some content that can't be migrated. It may be like files that are too big, maybe file types that are not supported by the service. And then there's things that just should not be. So again, if it's old content that no one has touched, why should you move it? So that was another story. When I was working in the university, and one of the summer breaks, I was working in a research facility, and I had a meeting with the chief engineer, and his assistant came in and had a binder of old lab reports. So she asked him, so what should I do with these lab reports? And he looked at them and then handed the binder back to her and said, well, get rid of them. Then she was on her way out, but then he said, but make a copy of them first. Mm-hmm. So again, it goes back to the whole thing that people hang on to content. I might need it. So from the application point of view, it's kind of straightforward what we should do. From the content point of view, the whole goal should be to reduce the content volume. Don't move stuff that you don't need, even if you like the band or like the t-shirts. Don't move them if you don't need them. Also, try to rearrange the data, because it's very likely that your source environment does not have the optimal information architecture. So in a migration process, it actually gives you an opportunity to rearrange the data. So I use an example for if I'm having a project management office within my organization. So how do we do projects? So do we do projects as individual site collections in that web application, or do we do projects underneath the PMO site collection? So again, there's pros and cons with both, but what I'm, especially when moving to the cloud, we tend to have limitations on how many site collections we can support in the cloud. So actually I'm a big proponent of rather than having many small site collections, actually having fewer but deeper ones. Again, you have to balance that out with the total number amount of storage available to the site collection. But again, doing it in one site collection gives you some additional benefits. So then the next thing is sort of what are the types of customizations that we usually see in the environments, and what are the remediation things. So this is kind of a way to group customizations into different buckets, because these all have different type of remediation plans. So branding solutions, all customers today have some level of branding implemented. So then to figure out how should we do branding in the new world. So because there are, depending on your strategy, you may run into different types of issues. So the classical master page approach, you need to be mindful of the things that we actually are introducing new master pages in the service that has components in them. Provisioning solutions, one of the other top things that I usually see in the customers that I work with, they have custom provisioning solutions. So how do you remediate them? Because they are typically written using farm solutions, full trust code, and may use timer jobs and whatnot. How do you do provisioning solutions in the cloud? Content types and site columns. So again, if you have deployed them using farm solutions, how do you do that in the cloud? What you should do as part of your customization inventory, once you know your customizations, is come up with a partitioning scheme that works for you. And then, because that makes it easier for you to plan the remediation activities. So with that, let's actually jump to the next section, which is all about OneDrive.
Okay. So OneDrive has some special considerations we need to take into account. And when you're doing migrations to OneDrive, you have to pre-create the site, the user's site.
By the way, how many of you are in the process or will soon start to migrate stuff into OneDrive sites? I guess that's why you're in this session, right? So, that was a silly question. Are you planning to do it yourself, or are you planning to use tools for that? Tools, hands up. Yourself? You can't say the both. Consultants, yes. Interns. Okay. Having a way to sort of sponsor schools to come and lift up data to my sites. Mm-hmm. There's multiple ways, right?
Right.
And we'll talk a bit about that in more detail.
Mm-hmm. So in the in SharePoint and in Office 365 in particular, the user gets licensed. They can, you know, start accessing SharePoint wherever their permissions allow, but their personal site does not get created automatically. And when we're going to do a migration, you need the target there to be able to migrate. Additionally, just because someone's an admin or has an admin account doesn't give them the rights to add files or do operations in somebody's personal site.
Yeah, there's a reason why it's called a personal site. Mm-hmm. It is your personal site.
Yep. So we'd have to add a migration account to the personal sites to be able to effectively do the migration. So we're going to talk through that process.
So the question was more on timing, when sort of the personal site needs to be there. So again, if you think of a migration scenario, the site has to be there before you migrate, right? So I have a large company that I was working with, 120,000 users. They roll out SharePoint Online. They're not going to pre-provision my site or personal sites for all of these. Because again, to the question earlier, so having empty site collection doesn't make any sense. So as part of your migration planning for doing the content migration plan for moving into the OneDrive sites, you need to figure out the right sequencing. So I'm moving this department, then first activity, provision the sites for those users, assign the permissions, then hand it over to the migration team. If you don't have any my sites today, so then my recommendation would be to just let people organically, so when they need it, they would go there. I wouldn't right. pre-create personal sites unless there is a business justification for it.
Yeah, and that dovetails neatly into this slide. How do they normally get created? In the normal course of action, the sites get provisioned when somebody goes and clicks on them or uses an application that's going to cause it to be instantiated. Right. So this is the pre-creation parts necessary if you're migrating content specifically to that user's personal site. If you're not doing that, there's really no reason to pre-create, and you can just let it happen organically through normal form use.
Yeah, where I see kind of some of the business drivers is for organizations, it's not necessarily, I don't see so much my site migrations to OneDrive. I see more like the personal file shares on the network, mm-hmm. or maybe competing technologies like Google Drive or whatever it's called, or things like that.
Dropbox, exactly. Okay. So if you do need to pre-create, there's a couple of different things. One thing that's coming up, not available yet, that I've seen a demo of it, it's being tested now, is a new CSOM, client-side object model, programming interface, and it's a create personal site on queue, so it's using a queue, bulk, and that's saying you can batch up a lot of them at one time.
So this is available. It's on the service. It's not publicly available in the bits that you can install in your own environments.
Mm-hmm. So on the client side. Now, that's great. It's nice to know about the future, but let me show you something that is available now. And you can call the same function using the REST services. So if you look at the code here, we're underscore API, profile loader, et cetera, gives you the way to do a call to this OnCube bulk. And in doing so, we can then start batching up and doing this A couple of caveats with this, though. It's limited to 200 at a time. The reason being is that the queue is actually shared across tenants. It's a farm-level resource. Right? So we try and throttle that type of resource to make sure one tenant isn't consuming it all and causing another tenant to have problems. Right? So when you're writing your programs or doing your scripting, you need to check, make sure your things go through, get put in the queue, and have a retry if you're doing it, from a script or a program, in case your request doesn't go through.
And this is an area where we've made lots of improvements in the service. So for those of you who've been on the service for a long time, like a year ago, the provisioning of my site, the speed was just, well, you consumed a lot of coffee, let me put it that way.
Yes.
Now you don't get to drink as much coffee, but you get your stuff done. So we've dramatically changed the back end. So moving from, we used to have just one queue per tenant. Now we have a queue per database. So we actually are increasing the throughput. It still is depends on what's going on at the farm. So if there's a lot of activities, you might see, but we've seen dramatic increases in the MySite creation. Mm-hmm. And partially thanks to the fact that we actually have had some large organizations who've had requests to sort of pre-create 100,000 MySites or whatnot. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of a forced us to look at the service to see what we can do to improve there.
Mm-hmm. So the second thing we mentioned was creating or adding those migration accounts, and that's also something that's scriptable. And you can either keep migration accounts or add an admin account by doing that, removing it when the migration is done. It gives you some possibilities.
I always recommend whenever you're doing migrations, I always recommend creating a dedicated migration account that has a display name that says like Contoso migration or something like that, because if you don't, so the worst thing that you could do is run the migrations using your account, because what you will do then is what SharePoint will show in cases if it can't identify the original author, it'll hand the documents gladly over to you. So you'll be the proud owner of a million documents within your company. And that happened to a friend of mine at HP when they did their migration from, I think it was from 2001 to 2003. Suddenly, there were 15,000 IP documents within the HP network associated to my friend. So then, of course, when people do searches, they're not just looking at content, they're looking at authors. So he got tons of weird mails asking about things that he had no idea about. So again, always create a dedicated migration account, use that for migration purposes.
Okay, great. Now switch over to a demo. Thank you.
Can you again increase the size?
Probably not. This is the admin center. Just wanted to show you. I've got a account here. You can see it's SBC demo 01. So it's what I'm showing is a licensed user.
I'll let you in on a secret. Whenever you see accounts 01, 02, or 03, that shows how many times we've tested things.
So be afraid. So I am logged in. You can see it's got my name on it. If I go to hit that demo.
So you're trying to access the personal site of this user. And since it's not created, you'll get 404 because that page doesn't exist, right? So it's mm-hmm. expected behavior.
And if I go to another account, and if I log back in, I'm not.
I almost know the end of your password now.
It's okay, I was doing a typo there too.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm here on this test, right? Because that one was provisioned. So that's what you'd expect to see. You also can see that when I go to their site, because I don't have specific rights on it, all of the things like new document and upload documents are disabled, right? Makes sense because not my personal site,
yes.
Right? So let's take a look at the calling the REST API to cause that personal site to be created. So this is a real iChart too, and before Kimo asks, I will
thank you.
Spin that up. The commented out line has the syntax for adding accounts, adding the personal sites. And it makes a REST call, and I'm going to go ahead and run this, passing in the demo one.
Okay. So the thing that will happen now, so that this does not directly create the personal site, but this puts the site creation request into the queue. So then the queue will process this. It'll might take up to a minute, and then so today, like the only way, easy way to sort of seeing if a user has already a my site is that you could actually look at their user profile data to see that if their my site URL is populated. If that's populated, you could see that the person has the my site. Mm-hmm. So in theory, once you click, it's done, Red. Go ahead, click the link. Oh, refresh.
Hey.
Still in progress.
While that's going, because that's queued up as it should be, I'm going to start showing the
PowerShell.
The PowerShell to add the permissions. So the what we have is a PowerShell script, and you can see that it, you know, it's connecting to the service using the tenant admin type of.
This is actually using both of the different commandlets or different modules. It uses both the SharePoint online module and the normal Microsoft online module. Mm-hmm. So we're using the Connect SPO service to talk to the tenant. We're also using the Connect MSOL service to actually talk to the tenant itself so that we can identify all the users within that tenancy.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And also, feel free to take pictures, of course, but there are, if you download the deck in the appendix, the scripts are included.
So,
okay. And what this is going to do is for each user in the farm, it's going to insert an account, right? And that way we'll be able to access, with write access, the personal sites.
And if you just write.
Okay. So let me see. Okay. And you see I hit refresh. Now we can get in.
So it took like 2-3 minutes. Within 2-3 minutes, the site collection was provisioned.
Mm-hmm. And it's the SP1 demo. You also can see we haven't done the permissions yet. I don't have any permissions on this site. So I'm going to go ahead and run that script, the add migration account PS1.
We'll get some errors here because this goes through all the users within that tenant and not all users have a my site.
Mm-hmm.
So we will get some notifications there.
So you can see that one that's scrolling past the red, that does not have a personal site. We go to add permissions to a site that doesn't exist. Of course, we're getting that error. If I come back over here to this account and hit refresh and go to the files, I can create a new document, upload documents now. So we've set the permissions. We now have an admin account that can go into this personal site and add files.
Yeah. Yeah, so as you can see, like with the OneDrive Pro, it's actually now possible to sort of orchestrate the migrations to it as well. It was much, much harder in the past. Mm-hmm. So let's actually pick up the speed. We only have 15 minutes left. So the final piece, kind of the migration planning, so how to do that, what are the, like, what should you think about? What are the other kind of dependencies that you need to look out for? So metadata synchronization, user profiles, the personal content we actually already talked about, so we can skip this. So again, the key things with the migration planning is, again, doing the cleanup, getting rid of the T-shirts, the cassettes, the old documents, whatnot, so that you actually get a relevant set of data that you're actually moving across. So you're just moving the right data, not the wrong data. And then the next thing is figuring out, so the migration tools or the migration approach, how to do this. So again, will you ask your users to do stuff themselves? So a perfectly viable sort of a OneDrive migration approach would be to let the users migrate content themselves from their personal drives into their OneDrive. So you could also use like the manual, the file explorer, the traditional ways for sort of manual lifting of content. But then the more content you have, you probably want to use tools. You may even want to have a staging environment to which you move content and then perform some cleanup operations and changes in that environment before you move them to the final information. And also, before you decide upon where to go, you need to have planned information architecture for your target. So what types of site collections? Again, will I have site collections versus sites, the content types, all of those things? So as part of your planning, you actually need to think of all of these things.
And do the mapping if you're collapsing multiple farms or multiple web apps?
Yeah, if you're collapsing multiple web applications, and then you need to be mindful of the fact that you may have conflicts in URLs and whatnot. So the other things, then once you sort of are in the process of actually doing, there's still, you clean up the content, but then before you actually start the migration, there's a set of pre-flight checks that you should use. So again, as Phil also already mentioned, the user license thing is key, because without a user license, SharePoint does not know about the user. So if you're migrating content and that user isn't licensed, you will not see the content with that username, because SharePoint doesn't know about that user. Manage metadata. So if you're doing migrations and you have are using terms in from the term store, so will you do that migration beforehand, or will you try to reapply them later on? Same thing for user profiles. You may actually have user profile data on premises that you have business logic that depends on it. So again, will you synchronize that to the cloud? And again, one of the things here to be mindful of fact is that will you still remain on premises as well? Because if you will have an on-premises environment, it's probably more important to look at a synchronization type of scenario. But whereas if you're sunsetting your on-premises environment, you can just do the uplifting of the terms or the user profile properties at one time. So then, again, once you sort of know this, so then you need to choose the right approach. So again, will it be self-service? Self-service is always easy, because budgetary-wise, it doesn't cost anything. We're actually like letting our end users do this. But the downside with it, it's manual. It's probably loss of fidelity. You lose metadata. And end users aren't happy when you're asking them to do things. It's like me asking my kids to clean their rooms. They're not happy if I tell them to do things. Right. So again, the other one, tool-based. So again, you can have a kind of orchestrated, scripted way using tools, or then you can have the kind of manual using tools. So someone is processing site A, and the next thing that they're doing is site B, and so on and so forth. And then, but the more complex your migration is, if you have a lot of customizations, if you have a lot of dependencies, make sure that you involve someone who's actually done this. Because, again, if you remember the first slide, Bobby Brown, everything is cool, or Mr. Roosevelt, pain and misery. In reality, if you get the experts, they can get you to the right place with the least amount of effort. Mm-hmm. So from the tooling point of view, you need to be mindful of certain things. So again, don't just accept the recommendation from Microsoft, from a salesperson, from anyone. Validate it yourself. So look at, like, be mindful of things like the feature set. So are those tools delivering on what you're expecting? Mm-hmm. So again, here I really, really emphasize always make sure that you do a pilot before you're choosing the final tool, mm-hmm. because you need to understand the feature set. So what can it do? What can't it do? The licensing costs, is it a tool that stands a standalone tool, or is it a tool where you have to purchase consulting at the same time? And then the bigger your migration, the more you need to be sure that that tool is cryptable so that you have a way of automate that process, because again, in large scale migrations, you don't want to end up in having a large team doing manual activities. So one thing that makes this specific for the cloud is, again, you cannot install any agents or any software on the SharePoint Online Farm. So all the migrations have to be done remotely. And another thing to be mindful of is that the user identities are different. So you're moving to Office, if you're using federated identities in Office 365, your user is identified by your UPN. Most likely, if you're doing on-premises, you're not using UPN as your identity. So your migration approach needs to also address the user mapping. So going from the domain / user into user at contoso.com.
So real simplistic demo, using a CSOM program to go and upload some files into the cloud. This is, like I said, a simple example. We just wanted to show you, one, that it is possible with your own bit of code or snippet to do this, and two, show that it is possible to go to the OneDrive. So I'm going to go ahead, run this code.
And for this tool, like the key thing here is that we will authenticate using the migration account. So again, if we would not have given permissions on the my site, or sorry, on the personal site for that migration account, this would fail. Mm-hmm. But now, since we did that PowerShell where we gave the permission, this will actually work, and we'll get some content moved across.
Yep. So if I go back out, still on that SBC demo one, if I hit refresh now, you can see it brought up some files that had been on my hard drive.
And again, this is a classic example. Don't do like we do. Do like we say. Mm-hmm. Now Phil is the proud owner of these two documents.
Yes.
Like, in reality, you would like to see a migration. Ideally, you would like to see the end user account there, but that's not realistic. But what you should, that's why you should have a migration account, so that you could see that this document was actually uploaded by a piece of software rather than a carbon-based use.
And you can see it's using the client APIs, the file, save binary direct. So don't recommend this approach, but it shows the concept.
Yeah, so the things to be mindful with this, so you can get the files across, but then if you need to worry about metadata, you would have to do additional work. But again, what I've seen for most my users within OneDrive, they don't care as much about metadata, but within SharePoint sites, they do. So what I've seen is for OneDrive migrations, people tend to focus on getting the files. If I'm doing a SharePoint migration, I care more about the feng shui and everything around it. So as a recap, so again, make sure that you do the assessment so that you can do a triage. Again, don't move stuff that shouldn't be moved. Make sure that you plan it accordingly, so you have a realistic schedule. You communicate to the end users that their content are going to move somewhere, and that they know when it's moving, and then also you'll tell them when it's going to move, and you'll tell them when it's been moved, so that you have that in place. Mm-hmm. Depending on a hybrid strategy, you need to be thinking about perhaps doing the synchronization of metadata, user profiles, and whatnot. Remediation, again, I can't stress it big enough. Remediation is a key activity. Make sure that you're planned accordingly for that. And then once you've sort of done your homework, then migration should move more into the brown space rather than the Theodore Roosevelt place. So we'll leave you with kind of what are the keys to success in, well, I would say that the key to success in any project, but particularly for migration projects, is, again, having the right people, so having the right skills. So let's say that if I'm doing a migration from a G drive into OneDrive, so we need to have someone who knows how I can read data from G drive. Mm-hmm. And then I need someone who knows about the target environment. Knowledge, if I need to write something, of course we need development skills. We should have someone who understands knowledge management because they should work on information architecture to figure out into what type of structure are we moving our data. And then realistic timelines. So again, that's why the pilot piece is really important, because if you do a pilot, then you can establish a realistic throughput for your migration. And once you have the throughput, then it's just mathematics. Then you can calculate how long the migration will take.
And it varies very much from environment to environment. Right? So you can't just go by somebody else's, oh, we got this much done in this amount of time.
Yeah. And then the commitment and having a strong steering committee. And the strong steering committee is important if you need to do this content triaging decisions. So like, who can make the call of what content gets left behind? So like, my wife can tell me, you don't wear these t-shirts. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. With that, these are some of the resources. And
the app model sample was something that's just been released and has a bunch of different samples and code on CodePlex to help jumpstart app development. So if you've got customizations to remediate, that's a good starting point to look for some patterns that work in the app world.
Yes, and that site will actually be, we anticipate that there'll be a lot of new things added to that environment as well, because we have a big push internally to actually educate and steer customers down the cloud application model. So this will be our vehicle for providing this reference implementation to you guys.
Okay.
So we still have like 10 minutes, I think, but.
No, we have about 3 minutes, right?
3 minutes, I don't carry a watch, I don't know what time. Mm-hmm. So anyway, so thanks for attending. Please remember to fill out your evaluations, and if there's any questions, you got our names and you can find us online or up here. And
great. So thank you very much.